This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The recent death of Matthew Ellis, a 20-year-old fraternity pledge in San Marcos, led Texas State University to suspend all Greek life activities. This fatal incident is suspected to be a result of excessive alcohol consumption, possibly due to hazing. It also happened recently with fatal consequences at state universities in Florida, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania. Every year, it seems that there are reports of deaths related to college hazing, but it also happens in our high schools and workplace. Are hazing practices becoming more common and more dangerous? What are the psychological effects of hazing? And why does hazing happen? How can it be prevented? Our guests this afternoon, we're joined by Caleb Downs. He's a breaking news reporter for the San Antonio Express News. We're also joined by Dr. Susan Lipkin. She is a psychologist and author of the book, Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. And Frank Neuer is with us. He is a hazing researcher, professor of journalism at Franklin College, and author of Hazing, Destroying Young Lives. And you're invited into our conversation. Call in if you've got stories to tell us or concerns to share. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. So let's start off by talking with Caleb, a reporter for the Express News. Tell us more about what we know, what we can report, what the facts are with Matthew Ellis.
So Ellis was a 20-year-old sophomore studying business there at Texas State, and earlier this month he was found dead after a pledge party, off-campus pledge party, held by his fraternity, the Phi Kappa Psi fraternity. One of the interesting things about this whole situation is that this fraternity had actually been suspended by the national organization, the fraternity's organization, as well as the university prior to this party that he had been participating in before his death.
So, Caleb, they had a history of this type of...
Yes, sir. We're not exactly sure what that history is, but we know that some of their practices resulted in them being suspended at some point prior to this party. So, you know, it's unclear if this party was even sanctioned by the national organization or the university.
And so the university did react by saying all Greek activities are now shut down. Did they have an explanation for that?
They're closing down the fraternities and sororities while they await the results of the investigation that the university started after Ellis's death. So they're reviewing the case, looking into what exactly happened. And at the conclusion of that investigation, they said the Greek life can continue. But until then, it's suspended.
But it does seem like they're making a conclusion based on what they know. And they may know more than we do at the is the university conducting the investigation or law enforcement? Who's doing that?
The university is conducting their own investigation as well as the TABC. They are looking into to Ellis's death to see if maybe any retailers had sold him or his fraternity brother's alcohol prior.
Because he's underage.
Yes, sir.
Now we have other hazing events that you've been covering. You're a breaking news reporter, but unfortunately, even within this past year, you've had other hazing stories that you've had to cover. You've almost become the hazing beat reporter for the Express News. One of them, of course, is the earlier this year, we had the big story coming out of Lavernia, Texas, and that's in Wilson County near San Antonio, about 30 miles from here. And give us the summary of that story again.
Okay, so back in February, one of the victims of this alleged sexual assault scandal came forward to Lavernia police and made an outcry, said that he had been sexually assaulted multiple times as part of a so-called initiation practice that the student athletes will go through from junior varsity to varsity teams. So whenever they're promoted, the varsity members will start this hazing initiation. And basically what it consisted of, we're told, is sexual assault practices, you know, in locker rooms, on campus, off campus, at homes around Lavergne. And this this was part of the basketball, football, and baseball athletic programs.
Yeah, so. I appreciate you trying to be delicate here. But I think to serve what we're trying to do here this afternoon, we need to really kind of expose things for what they are. And according to a federal lawsuit that had been filed, these were assaults where we had children who were being sodomized by their fellow athletes, fellow students. And apparently there was some knowledge of this practice going on by coaches, teachers, administrators, and there was no they were being sodomized using objects like a nozzle that was in the locker room, and this was going on basically with the knowledge of the of the supervisors, and they did nothing to stop it. That's the allegation.
Yeah, and you know, if we want to really get into the details, basically what would happen would be about three or four of the varsity members would hold down one of the initiates, the so-called initiates, and then penetrate them either with their pants on or pants off with, like you said, the threaded end of a carbon dioxide tank, Gatorade bottles, baseball bats, just basically anything they could get their hands on.
And there was another hazing story that you covered, and this is at the Bexar County Sheriff's Department. Can you talk about that quickly?
Yes, sir. So this involved the CERT team at the Bexar County Jail. They compare them to basically like a SWAT team.
This is a rapid response outfit formed the Bexar County Sheriff's Department, where they were, you know, basically were charged of enforcement and controlling of rowdy inmates in the jail.
Yes, sir.
By force. These guys were tough.
Yes, sir. And, you know, they wear the full kind of combat gear, and they have the nightsticks. But what they're specifically accused of doing, and what was actually captured on video, was holding down one of their fellow members who was handcuffed at the time and tasing him a number of times. And this was filmed and posted on social media. And, you know, even the Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar said this happened at a party, and a four-year-old girl actually witnessed this happen and was videoed holding the taser as well.
And how did Sheriff Salazar react to this? What action did he take?
I believe the...
I think that six of them were suspended.
It was seven, and I believe they were suspended, and he's actually... he's looking into disciplinary measures for the person who released the video as well.
All right, so just here locally, we're talking about three very serious incidents of what appears to be hazing. When we come back, we're going to talk to our hazing experts and hear about what creates hazing, what drives hazing, what are the psychological effects of hazing, how it happens, not just at our colleges, not just but also in our high schools, as we hear, in our workplaces also. And what are the implications down the line? How it gets worse generation after generation, and then we have fatal consequences. What can be done about hazing? What are the legal consequences for hazing? We want to hear from you. If you've got a story, if you have concerns, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've been talking about some local disturbing incidences. You can call them incidences. That's a trivial way of putting it, but this is what they are, of hazing, what appears to be hazing. But it's not just local. This is a national phenomenon. It's been going around the country. We've had lots of fatalities happening on university campuses. We're going to be talking about hazing. We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We want to hear your stories, and you can remain anonymous. So have you experienced hazing as part of a fraternity, a sorority, maybe in the military or your workplace? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. So let's turn to our other guest now. Hank Neuer is with us. He's a hazing researcher, professor of journalism at Franklin College. He's the author of the book Hazing, Destroying Young Lives. And also with us is Dr. Susan Lipkins, a psychologist and author of Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. So Dr. Susan Lipkins, let me go to you first. You heard these stories about what's happening just here locally in San Antonio, but you have a national view. What do you see?
Well, I believe that what you're seeing in Texas is really a microcosm of the country, that we see hazing following what I call the blueprint of hazing, which is you come in high school, you just want to be a member of a group, you've worked really hard to be in the band or on the football team, and you are hazed, and then the next year you become a bystander and you watch as others get hazed, and eventually now you're a senior member and you become the perpetrator and you feel like you have the right and the duty to pass on that ritual. And so you do. Then you pack that up into your backpack and you take it with you to college, the military, and the workplace. And we see it in all those places. And if you look at the news, you see that, you know, we have hazing deaths and issues in all of those locations, and that hazing has been, until now, part of our culture that is really acknowledged, accepted. There's a wink-wink. There's a symbiotic relationship between the colleges and the Greek system. And that, from my point of view, the reason people haze is to maintain that hierarchy and to discipline. And when you look at all of these incidences, it's to prove that you're worthy of being part of the group, or it's those people in charge want to maintain their status, and they're saying, you know, we have power, and we're going to use it and show you, you know, our power and demonstrate it, and or to discipline because, you know, you didn't do the right thing, or even if it's a fake right thing, you didn't do the right thing, and so now we have the right to discipline you through these practices.
Now, Hank Newler, you're a researcher, professor of journalism. You see, there's a lot now in social media. It seems like hazing has come out of the darkness. We can see more of what's going on. Have you noticed that?
It is, and I think a big part of it was the death of Tim Piazza at Penn State. The details were pretty horrific. Number one, it was videotaped because there was surveillance video placed by an alum who had renovated the house. And so basically womb to tomb, it was shown that Tim's life could have been saved after he fell down, but any member who tried to intervene was thrown into a wall or shamed into not saying anything. No one woke up the advisor, who went to bed about 9 o'clock, and the advisor was totally misled because this was supposed to be a sanctioned alcohol present event. Instead, it was a wild hazing party.
Timothy,
and it got national attention.
Timothy Piazza, 19-year-old, died at Penn State. He died not from alcohol poisoning, although his alcohol level was 3 or 4 times higher than the driving limit. It was from the wounds that he received from falling down the stairs and also from being struck repeatedly. And so he died a very painful, agonizing death, and the video is just horrific to watch. And many people have been charged in that, criminally charged. And so, you know, Hank, do you think that the charging and the criminal activity afterwards with the justice system, is that going to have a chilling effect on trying to stop hazing?
I'm going to say yes or no. I know I started writing about this after a death at Nevada, Reno, where I was a student in 1975, and I was interested in the behavior aspects. At that time, no one was going to prison for such an event. In fact, I just found another death today, the University of Rhode Island, that occurred in the 60s, and that was a $500 fine by the school itself. So we are seeing more charges being levied, but only in a handful of cases are we seeing serious felonies. We saw one at Chico State, saw one with a band death at Florida A&M, and a fraternity incident at Florida A&M. But there's a lot of charges, but they often go south or are settled. These are handsome people when they get to court all dressed up in suits and ties, and the courts often have leniency, where I would wish that they would send a message and give a hard sentence.
Well, is there a criminal charge of hazing, or is this just assault or murder?
Hazing charges are often not placed. The district attorney will try to go for serving alcohol to a minor, assault, things that are easier to prove. The definition of hazing gets argued constantly. In fact, with the young man who was sentenced to 6 years at Florida A&M in the death of a band leader, that is under review by the Florida Supreme Court at this present time. The arguments made by the attorneys are that it's not constitutional. And so that's a real difficulty in terms of definition. Number two, in surveys, it's shown that even when people go through hazing-related practices, they don't see what they endured as hazing.
Dr. Susan Lipkins, what do you define as hazing?
I define it as a process used by groups to maintain a hierarchy or to discipline, and those activities are either physically or psychologically harmful or potentially harmful. And I just have a comment on what you were talking about just now, and I am an expert in hazing cases, a legal expert, so I get to read all the arguments, you know, and all the depositions. And we see even in the Tim Piazza case, which is really interesting, is that all of the charges that would be most significant, like towards murder, were dropped by the DA. And then a new DA came and said, hey, we want a different judge and we want to recharge. And the whole case in Pennsylvania got opened up again, and that new charges are being filed because they dropped the felony charges. And it's usually dropped to a misdemeanor, and people walk away. I think that the issue is, does anybody think that they're going to be held responsible? And from my experience, kids walk through a threshold, and we have honors kids, Boy Scouts, kids who have really good judgment, typically, you know, and moral fiber. They walk through this doorway that says hazing, and it's there's a code of silence. And the code of silence says, nothing that goes on here will go to the outside world or you will be held responsible for. And frequently, they're not held responsible. Mostly, they're not. And mostly, they squiggle out of it, as you're implying here. So the question you had to Hank was, you know, how is social media changing it? And I think part of it is that they've been photographing this and videoing it since they had video cameras, because I was seeing it, you know, way back in the early 2000s. But now it's going public more often. And when it's going public more often, or like when we have real footage of the entire hazing available to us, it's harder and harder for people to say that this didn't really happen. So I think that maybe the advent of social media and technology has actually helped us to find hazing. What we do with it, and as a culture, are we going to bring it out of the closet, so to speak, and continue to shine light on it as you are doing today, and then say that we really need to stop this kind of behavior, you know, in all aspects, just like we're doing with sexual harassment at the moment, so throughout the country, you know, I mean, maybe there really will be a sea change. And I have just one story that I think is hopeful, and for people like Hank and I who've been fighting this for a while, you can lose hope. And that's recently the black students at Duke University actually wrote to the president asking for help with the hazing that was going on in the black fraternity. And so that's the first time that the insiders, the kids who are actually doing the hazing and being hazed, are asking authorities for help. And it's that. It's just like the sexual assault victims. When the kids band together, when there's a group of people who say, I don't want to be held responsible, I don't want to maybe end up in court or the morgue, that maybe we will start to see a change in hazing.
Okay. A lot of people justify hazing or rationalize it by saying there's a level of consent involved by the victims. They're saying, well, you know, they knew that what they were getting into, they signed up for it, and this is what, and they wanted this, and then it's, you know, it's their fault too. So do you hear that sometimes, Dr. Susan?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. In hazing cases, this is the key issue that I have to explain to juries. There is, from my point of view, there is no such thing as consent to hazing, because the concept of hazing is that we're going to surprise you. We will deny everything we do if you ask us point blank, are we going to brand you? No. Are you going to have to eat, you know, foods that you're not supposed to eat that are not edible? No. Are you, you know, are you going to have to drink X amount of alcohol and Y amount of time? No. And then you actually have to do it. So, first of all, they lie about what's going to happen. But most importantly, it's supposed to be a surprise. We're going to surprise you and wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and make you do marching in your underwear in the snow. You know, we don't tell you what's going to happen. And that is part of the element that makes it, you know, so powerful. powerful and scary to adults.
Okay, I'm going to take a Susan, I'm going to take a caller right here. This is Will. And Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. No, I was explaining that, you know, y'all make it sound like all hazing is bad, and I disagree with that. I was in Future Farmers of America in high school. We had Green Hand Initiation. It was a fundraiser. They would dress the freshmen up in gunny sacks and make them wear pantyhose or women's shoes and run around. Nobody got hurt. And I think the hazing that we hear about in college now is just a reflection of the lack of morals and basically standing up for yourself that you have in society in these younger generations now.
Will, thank you for the call. You bring up some great points. I'm so glad you called in, and good luck with that. So, Susan, can you address that? Was that a harmless event?
No, because it's humiliating. And does it really teach anybody to be a better farmer or to be a better member of that group?
Well, what about the sexual? Nature of the humiliation?
Well, let me just say one thing. There are three stages of hazing: mild, moderate, and severe. And part of the mild is we're going to dress up like Halloween. It's no big deal. And there are a lot of mild things, sing a song, do, you know, very mild things that people think are not so important. But that's like the outside. What we don't see is what happens. It escalates, and it goes into more moderate and severe and sexualized and brutal hazing. So we can't control that from the outside. We don't know which groups are going to stop there and who's going to be harmed by it or who doesn't care about it and which groups are going to keep on going until somebody ends up dead. And that's why hazing experts say no hazing is acceptable, and truthfully, I don't think that hazing experience that the caller spoke about was particularly helpful to his psyche. Maybe it was fun, maybe it was a ritual, but maybe it wasn't really so relevant to anything that they had to do in the future.
All right, Hank, can you respond?
If I can jump in, Dave, I investigated FFA, Future Farmers of America, hazing from 87 to 90 for my 1990 book, Broken Pledges. We went to an FFA convention, had my grad students there. The hazing was widespread, some of it included electrocution in Loris, South Carolina, and some really severe events. The FFA addressed it in 1990 after that book came out.
But also the pantyhose, the makeup, all these things that he was talking about. I mean, these are things that are, why these items, why in this fashion? It seems to me that there's certain things that they do in order to break down sexual inhibitions or to look for individuals who are particularly vulnerable. And then with those people, they will target them for further exploitation. Susan?
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think if you look at the professional athletics, unfortunately, how many times have we seen pictures of the baseball teams or the football teams doing cross-dressing? I think it's been acceptable in this society to do that, and that it is, you know, homosexuality, homoerotic behavior in the locker rooms is, like, you know, very common and part of hazing. And I believe in the last 10 years, 15 years, we've seen each year more and more sexualization of the hazing events, bringing us to the kinds of sodomy that is sweeping the nation in high school athletics particularly.
Okay.
So I don't know that the specifics of cross-dressing were to the particular people. I think it's kind of generalized. But the process of doing that is, we've accepted it, you know, from our pro teams all the way down to high school.
All right. We're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts about hazing, initiation rituals happening all around us, all across the country, sometimes with fatal consequences? 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. Welcome back to The Source now. This is talking about hazing, and this afternoon we've got some terrible incidents of hazing that have happened around us here in San Antonio and across the country. We want to hear how hazing has impacted you or your family. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. But to the caller that we had earlier, Hank, talking about we're making all hazing look bad, is there good hazing?
I don't believe there is. I think mentoring works just as well. Essentially, hazing is a form of cheap entertainment that, yes, may cause pledges to bond together against the same common enemy, the fraternity brothers or the senior athletes, But there are other ways to achieve that solidarity.
And Susan?
Yes, I agree. There is no such thing as good hazing. I think there are positive rituals, you know, at a birthday party when we have birthday cake and blowout candles, that's fine. You know, any ritual that doesn't hurt you is okay with me. And I believe that, you know, rituals are something that people feel comfortable with. We see it in religious, you know, in religions all, you know, all throughout time. The hazing part is, you know, when you're really using power to assert yourself in a way that is harmful to probably yourself, the perpetrators, as well as the victims, because the perpetrators may or may not end up being responsible for what they're doing. And often they themselves have been victims.
Doesn't hazing work sometimes to break down independent activities, independent thinking by individual members? It also creates this shared bond by the people who go through it. It's a sort of a breaks down of their inhibitions to make them really want to join this group. We see that in cults. We see that sometimes in military training. You know, they're just exploiting this the psychological bias that's in existence. Susan?
Yes, I agree that that's the concept to break you down. And let's just use those, you know, that phrase, break you down. Does anybody really want to be part of an organization that has to break you down? You know, don't we want to choose to be part of that organization and work for the better good or for the team or whatever with some conscious choice rather than being, quote, broken down to the point where we don't know what day it is or what time it is or who's up and we just want, like, the pain to stop and we'll do whatever you say, just leave me alone? A lot of the things that you look at in a list of hazing that Hank and I have discovered really are against, you know, the issues of torture, international issues of torture and hazing, like waterboarding, happens to be on the same list, but we somehow tolerate it in hazing, and we say it's not legal, you know, in other arenas.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Number is 210-614-8980. We want to hear what you think about hazing and these initiation rituals, if you think they've gotten out of control, or if maybe we're being too harsh on them. We want to hear what you think. Chris is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to very quickly say that I'm just not sure that this younger generation, that they're ever really challenged anymore by a lot of things. And, I'm just curious what the panelists would have to say about if there's any value in a child or adolescent being pushed out of their comfort zone having to do with building a more resilient adult. Thank you.
All right, Chris, thank you for that call. So challenging individuals, pushing them out of their comfort zone. And so, Dr. Susan, you're a psychologist. What do you think?
Yes. Well, thank you. Thanks for asking the question. I think resilience is really important, and I do think that people have to reach outside of their comfort zone. I don't think hazing is the way to do it. In the adolescents that I see, and I do, my practice is mostly adolescents, a lot of adolescents, they're being challenged all the time. I think it's harder to be a parent and a kid in today's world because of social media, because of the degree of competition to get into any team or any group or college or a job. So I think that those who are building resilience, which I hope that they do, should not use hazing as the way to do that. I don't think that's an appropriate way.
And Hank Neuer, do you think that's why they orchestrate these initiation rituals in order to build character?
I don't think it's to build character. I think it's to teach precedence, to put the newcomers into their place, and that was exactly the reason given in the 19th century when freshman-sophomore hazing was put into place. And number two, at that particular time, the educators agreed with it. College presidents, faculty members, they supported the hazing and the putting of freshmen in their place. It was very ritualized.
Okay, let's go back to the callers, and this is Howard. Hi, Howard. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Doing all right.
I'm actually a member of one of the fraternities in question. I'm a member of Beta Theta Pi. I went to school at Texas Tech. I also went to school at University of Houston. Beta Theta Pi has had in place a program called Men of Principle since about 95, 96, 97, somewhere around there. And what this program is in place, this is a nationwide, this applies to all chapters of Beta Theta Pi. And what this principle states is that hazing is not tolerated whatsoever. It is the fastest way. If you're caught hazing, you will be immediately expelled from the fraternity. We also do not allow underage drinking. We require our members to have a high GPA. It's a minimum of a, I believe it's now, it's been raised to 3.0. When my time, it was 2.5 GPA. So you have to have a high GPA to stay in the fraternity. We require respect of all people, cultures, everything. And when we hear about these hazing incidences, it's because you've got a few people who have kind of gone the wrong way and they've lost their path. And unfortunately, sometimes there is poor local alumni involvement as well. Because this has been the doctrine of Beta Theta Pi for decades now.
But Howard, don't sometimes they have things like unsanctioned, unrecognized events that happen off campus and sort of in the shadows of the actual fraternities?
Yeah, and I remember that happening to me when I was you know a pledge, but it is not supposed to happen, and we have constant meetings on this and constant reinforcement on this. Unfortunately, you're dealing with a whole bunch of kids here still. They may be legally adults, but their brains are still not completely formed, and they make bad decisions. And we try as we must, you know, a lot of it has to come back to keep educating them and telling them this. And the other thing also is we need to really get into the minds of, into the heads of the pledges at the very beginning as part of the sort of the old, you know, fraternity rush that there is no hazing. And if you spot any hazing whatsoever, that needs to be notified to the Interfraternity Council.
All right, Howard, thank you for the call. I appreciate your comments and your information that you bring to the table here. So, Hank Neuer, Howard's comments?
Well, I agree totally. A disclosure for one summer, I went to the Beta Theta Pi Men of Principle camp in Oxford, Ohio, and got to observe. The students didn't know that I was there to observe as a hazing expert. They just thought I was another counselor. Beta Theta Pi has a wonderful program. On the other hand, the Mavericks in the Beta Theta Pi chapter at Penn State were the ones that killed Tim Piazza. And so the idea of governance really has come into play. Can 18 and 19-year and 20-year-olds really rule their chapter as has been done, or do fraternities need to bring in alums as part of the council and hand over the reins of governance to the alums?
And Susan Lipkins?
There's so much to say about this. My reading of many cases is that what the national says it stands for and what the local actually does is like two usually different cases. And the national collects a lot of fees, and much of the fees go to the insurance to cover their risk management, in particularly in hazing, and it goes up every year. So the national knows that there's hazing going on. They may not know exactly when and where, but they know that it happens, and that's why they have such a high insurance policy that the kids actually have to pay for. How much do the nationals collect the dues, but how much do they actually oversee the locals? And in the locals, unfortunately, we see alumni that actually encourage hazing, that don't stop it. And then we see, you know, cases where the alumni will say, don't do it, wink, wink, and they walk away, and they know exactly what's happening. Just like, you know, the house mothers who may have been in, you know, or fathers who may be sleeping there, they don't know that there's a huge, you know, party going on. And everybody on campus, you know, we have to break the code of silence and create many ways, anonymous ways to report hazing and actually have rewards for people, just like there are tips that, you know, if you give the cops a tip and you get a reward, we need to start rewarding people and having them be brave and rewarded for reporting things that appear to be hazing, because a lot of times it looks like hazing, it smells like hazing, it's hazing. And everybody on campus knows it. The security know it, the maintenance people know it, the teachers know it, the kids come to school and they're like deprived of sleep and they're smelly and they're not allowed to change their clothes. The kids know it, the RAs know it, everybody knows it, nobody's doing anything about it. So, you know, I think that the national may have a wonderful, you know, statement, but when it comes down to what's actually happening, we unfortunately end up with, you know, all the kinds of cases that we've been talking about.
And Caleb Downs with the Express News, you wanted to join?
Yeah, one of the things we were talking about earlier in the Lavergne case was that teachers and faculty, you know, were aware allegedly of, you know, some of these hazing practices. So to Susan's point, you know, everybody in Lavergne High School had been talking about what had happened to this one particular student at an away game in the locker room. He had been sexually assaulted. Everybody's talking about it. And even the teacher is telling everybody to not talk about it in the classroom. And she brings him outside and speaks to him one-on-one in front of everybody. This is according to a lawsuit that was filed here in the Western District of Texas, a civil rights lawsuit. So in addition to that, the athletic director at Lavergne High School addressed the entire varsity team and said, hey, cut it out. And he said something along the lines of, you know, if you keep doing this, you're not going to have a girlfriend and you may even go to jail. You know, so there was definitely
an effort. It continued.
Exactly.
According to the testimony in the federal lawsuit. Okay, yes, we're going to talk more about that. We're going to take some of these callers. We're going to look at military hazing when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source on hazing after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. It was earlier this month that Matthew Ellis, a 20-year-old fraternity pledge in San Marcos, was found dead. This led to Texas State University suspending all Greek life activities. It appears that he died due to a fatal consumption of alcohol, possibly due to hazing. We're talking about hazing this afternoon on The Source. We want to get to talking about how you can arm your kids, your family, against the supposed consent to hazing. Maybe by talking about it, we can tell them that they don't have to do this. But right now, let's get back to the callers. Zachary is on the line. Zachary, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to touch on two points mostly. I know fraternities and sororities, they're like a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And, you know, well, anyways, my main point is with the military, I know Susan said something about nobody wants to go into a place where you have to be broken down, but the military, that's what they do. They break you down, but then they focus hardly on bringing you back up and building you up into a better person to fit into the society more. So I don't think all hazing is bad. I think there could be a healthy hazing as far as like maybe make them go do some community service with a funny hat on, for example. If they're out of shape or overweight, maybe make them hit a weight goal. That could be some kind of hazing. You know, on a healthy basis, like go hit the right weights at the gym or something like that. You know, I'm sure there's some kind of healthy hazing. If people just put a little creativity into it, they could get to it. With that said, the people who are making their recruits go to the edge of death just to be a part of this society.
All right, Zachary.
Obviously have some psychological issues.
Zachary, thank you for the call. I'm going to go to Miguel because it's a similar call. Miguel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Davies. In a similar vein, I attended the United States Naval Academy here about 10 or so years ago. And when you're a freshman, there are certain things that you can and cannot do, right? So you can't leave the hall during certain times. If you're in the hall, you can't walk. You have to hold your things in a certain manner. And I was just wondering what the panelists thought in terms of that being applied to the military, where it's not necessarily it may be a little bit different since, you know, they're building soldiers. They're not just building people. And some of those things are a little bit different. But thank you, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Great. Thanks, Miguel. Appreciate that. So Dr. Susan Lipkins, psychologist, author of the book Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. Your reaction?
Well, I think that the military has to instill a certain amount of certain kinds of behaviors so that people are actually safe, you know, when they're in a war zone or in some dangerous position. And those are the kinds of things that we think happen in basic training. And if the people in charge are not abusing their own authority, they're teaching them the appropriate things, that's fine. it turns into hazing, and I think this is really important for people listening, that we're not saying that all things are bad. We're saying things that are going to cause harm, that are not necessary in order to be a good soldier, but just because, you know, it's humiliating, or I'm asserting my power, or I'm making sure that you know that you're not allowed to do whatever I don't want you to do, you know, that kind of thing, and I'm going to discipline you because I feel like it, that those are the kinds of things that are physically or psychologically damaging. That is really what we're talking about here. And I think that the military itself is looking at hazing now because we see that people have been abusing their authority, that they have been, you know, racist, anti, you know, religious kinds of things. That I've been involved in military situations where the soldiers are committing suicide because of the kinds of hazing and the degree of humiliation and pain that they've suffered. So I cannot imagine why any of that would be something that any military would be proud of or that any country should be proud of.
Hank Neuer, author of Hazing, Destroying Young Lives. You want to add?
Okay. Interesting thing is that the Government Accounting Office, which I cited for this book, has really investigated hazing in the military and found the Coast Guard to be the most derelict in terms of trying to address it. I agree with Susan's point. The suicides and the hazing abuses, particularly of Muslims, for example, have really ratcheted up many of the divisions, particularly the Marines, to be more aware of hazing and to really advise that there is a difference between discipline and abuse. Once you go over that line from discipline into abuse, you're into hazing, and we've seen the suicides, we've seen the dropouts, and really the United States then is no better than Armenia or the former Soviet Union or Russia or East Germany and Germany today that also have these rampant hazing cases in the military.
Now, I do want to talk about how we can maybe educate our young people to arm themselves to prevent becoming victims of hazing, but real quickly I want to cover what happens in the workplace and the legal consequences that can happen if this goes on in your workplace and you're a manager or you're the owner of the institution, why they should be on the lookout for that. So, Dr. Susan Lipkins?
Well, we see it a lot in restaurants. It's kind of interesting, you know, that the line workers have been accused of hazing. And again, we see it wherever there is a hierarchy. So like in the church, 24% of the kids in church groups have been hazed. And people in the workplace who are in that hierarchy, who have experienced this kind of hazing, you know, the victims should be able to report it to HR. There should be anonymous ways to report. Hopefully there will be the whistleblower laws will be protecting them. And the authorities figures have to, I think we're starting to see a sea change in the country where, you know, people are finally being held responsible as, you know, managers and top dogs that, hey, you're not allowed to do this stuff to people and you're not allowed to allow others to do it. The way this is going to stop is when we break that code of silence and when we have ways, anonymous ways to report it, multiple ways to report hazing, and somebody who knows how to interview and investigate. I find the people interviewing and investigate from the high school up have no clue what they're doing and frequently are stepping on, psychologically stepping on the victims and the evidence.
And you can create a hostile work environment. That's grounds for legal action. Hank Neuer, have you seen workplace hazing really bite the owner, the manager hard for allowing that to happen?
Yes, it has. And I think it's interesting that it was Texas that has had the harshest sentencing for any hazing case. This was a company called Republic. A young worker, second or third day, was tied to a crane and spun through the air where he flew off and died. It was covered up but reported by one brave witness worker. The sentences were 17 and 5 years. I would concur with all of that Susan says, but also to note that in the new book I have a writer expert who's talking about Title IX. Title IX has made it much easier to prosecute and go after cases of harassment and hazing in the workplace.
So Dr. Susan Lipkins, can we talk to young people and explain to them that that sometimes you can't help it? If you're assaulted, you're assaulted, and there's no way in and out of it. We saw that in Lavernia. They didn't consent to that. But many times you can say, this is not for me, and walk away. Do you think so?
No, unfortunately. I wish I could say that. We never finished the conversation on consent. I don't think there is such a thing as consent in hazing. And I think when you're, you know, when you want to be in the band or the football team and they're doing it, when you walk away, A, you're socially ostracized, and B, you're not on the team. So, you know, you're losing whatever you've been working for your whole life, you know, or hoping for. So it's not that easy to just walk away. It would be nice if we had, you know, more ways to report it, so maybe it stops earlier and we get a change in the behaviors. But, you know, there is a case that both Hank and I know about where a brave 16-year-old was hazed on a football team, and he, you know, he came forward after he was almost sodomized and told the coach. He quit the team, and it became, you know, a huge thing. But he was brave enough, and it started because at the age of, like, 12, he read an article, a magazine article, that was about hazing. Now, I wouldn't start training kids younger than 12 because I don't think they're ready to hear about it. But I think from 12, 13 on, parents should be talking about bullying and hazing and harassment and how to handle it and who to report it to and how to report it. And you know, I think we have to train everybody. We have to train the kids, but first we have to train the parents. We have to train all the, you know, the school authorities. And, you know, just one more thing is all those coaches and all those people who deal with kids, like, after school, most of them are not trained, and we don't know who they are, and they definitely don't know a whole lot about management or hazing. So, you know, it's like the whole country has to pay attention to this and start to really take it seriously.
Caleb Downs, you want to add to that, San Antonio Express News reporter?
On the topic of education, you know, after the news of the Lavergne hazing sexual assault scandal broke, there was a vigil held in Lavergne, and one of our reporters, Lauren Karuba, went over there and spoke to some of the families that attended. She ended up speaking with a woman who told her that her sons didn't even realize that what had been going on in the football team constituted sexual assault. Like, they were just unaware that this was something, you know, they could face criminal charges for.
And now Lavergne ISD has instituted an anonymous call line. They've gone into an education program encouraging people to speak out. And trying to extinguish this culture of hazing, sexual assault, abuse that they somehow fostered up in their environment, and they're doing that, right?
Yes, sir.
And we'll see how that plays out, you know, in the coming months. We're still waiting to find out what's going to happen with the criminal prosecution of the individuals, of the students who were expelled and who have gone to other schools, and the conclusion of the federal case that has come forward. With us this afternoon has been Caleb Downs, breaking news reporter for the San Antonio Express News. Also with us is Hank Neuer, researcher for hazing, professor of journalism at Franklin College, author of the book Hazing, Destroying Young Lives. And also with us is Dr. Susan Lipkins, psychologist, author of Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.